Mini episode 1824 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1824. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, my good friend Jake Digman, who is an impresario on all things MMA, pro wrestling. Anytime anything is verging into the squared circle, we always want to catch up with him. It's time for WrestleMania 41, the crowning part of the year for all fans sports entertainment. And again, we get to see this weekend in Las Vegas how everything plays out. We're actually Paradise, Nevada. It's the unincorporated part of Clark County, as I go Cliff Clavin on everybody with that little piece of information. But Jake, always a pleasure to have you on, my man. How you doing today, buddy?
Oh, it's great to be back in the FDH Lounge, and I'm looking forward to talking some of the grapples with you.
Yeah, it's always great when you and I are able to do that. And in taking a look at the card, just a big picture, I know that from what I texted you, you were kind of coming down in the same place as where I was on this as far as the build of the show, what they had put together. I would say more or less basically the depth of the card, which would be my biggest concern here. And again, as we've established previously, my flavor these days is far, far more on the AEW side. Yours is more on the Fed side. So one would kind of expect me to be looking at this with a little bit of a jaundiced eye, but I don't think I really was a year ago. I think a year ago, I was much more impressed with what the card was. This year, I'm actually kind of surprised because I'm not going to quite say that it quite feels like a Vince era card, but it feels more like a Vince era card, I think, than what we would expect from Triple H, where it has been an improvement in the era since Vince.
The build to this has been very weird. That's only the word I can use to think of to describe it. As it has veered from what they have, and it's the Triple H has been a purveyor of very, very well done long-term storytelling. One event leading into another. And I just feel that this one is this card, not saying it's going to be bad, but I'm just saying it from an entertainment standpoint. It just feels like WrestleMania has always been like, you know, the culmination of the story. And this just kind of feels like it's just a bunch of stuff thrown together in a very interesting, like in a not interesting, but in a almost haphazard way, I would say. It just kind of like they're looking, taking names out of a hat, going, okay, we got to put this here, regardless of what the actual build for the whole year has been. But we'll see what happens coming out of it. But it's definitely an interesting twist. I said to you in a text off air, the build to this reminds me very much of the AEW pay-per-views where they just, I mean, I don't know if they still do this, but for the longest period of time, it was just, we have to get everybody possible that we can onto the show. So it's going to be a, you know, a seven-man ladder match and four tag team scramble and all this other stuff. And that's kind of how certain elements of this feels to me.
Well, I will say, I mean, if we're going to go apples to apples here, you would look at probably All In the last 2 years and maybe All Out the first couple of years of AEW, that has basically been their WrestleMania. And I think certainly the last 2 years with All In being stadium shows, they built to a host of big matches. And I think that was, well, whatever criticisms there might be for the rest of the year, I think on the biggest night of the year, I think they've come through with build and with depth in terms of, because I've always said this, and I think this was before Double or Nothing last year when I had Alex Marvez on the show. And I said to him, and I think I've said this to you before, that one of the ways that I assess a show is the number of matches that are plausible semi-main events. And WrestleMania in the past has had the very best ones have had five or six matches that you could have plausibly called the semi-main event. And this is a thinner one than I think I've seen in quite some time in that regard. Another thing is, and I'll probably mention this a little bit along the way as we're going, there are a couple points here where, and again, you're following this week to week, I'm more following the big picture of what's happening with the promotion, but I know what the stories are by and large. It feels like, to your point, it's not merely a matter of like, okay, these guys are at sort of a similar place on the card. These guys are both sort of borderline upper mid-carders. Let's put them together. Let's make a program. But it feels like in terms of story beats, you talked before, and that's a great point, WrestleMania being the culmination of many stories. There's a lot of things on this card that I'm looking at, and it's like, this looks like the intermediate point of some of these stories that they're telling. And that to me is kind of unusual. I wonder if they're treating this year a little bit different. I guess I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. With this being John Cena's last year, and they're going to try and bill many events along the way as being a little bit bigger, particularly in December, his last match, where that December pay-per-view is generally a throwaway, if they even have one, which they haven't the last couple of years. I wonder if Triple H isn't consciously holding back on some of the matches he might have otherwise put here. This is me giving him the benefit of the doubt.
I mean, that might be the case of the overall story of the Cena retirement. But as far as like everything, like the other elements to this, it's like, you know, I don't know. I just like there was it just like a lot of the build is like out of nowhere. I mean, not to say that it's necessarily been bad. It's just the whole out of nowhere feeling to a lot of it, like the. I'm just going to go with the women's triple threat. That just like, you know, there was a buzz for a Bianca Belair and a Rhea Ripley because it's something that has never happened. But by doing this, they're giving you that match, but they're not giving you that match. So they can still put it on hold because they add Io in there where she can do. I think Io Sky is very entertaining and for what she does. For her particular style, but my style of wrestling, and it's interesting, Rick, as I've gotten older, I like a good hoss fight. That is what I'm into. And the older I've become, the more and more, you're going to laugh at this. I went back and watched a match that I had never seen, and I absolutely loved it. And all of the experts would say, dud, 0 stars, terrible. King Kong Bundy versus Uncle Elmer.
Okay.
It was one move, and it was an elbow drop, and that was it. They weren't working together to do coordinated spots or all the stuff, and it felt like two big guys going at it in a fight. That's what I like. Not to get on too far onto a soapbox, but like that's how I like my wrestling. I like it to be a simulated fight, not a simulated dance competition where you can tell they're so – like. The modern style of what we have, everyone just works for that false finish. Everybody, AEW, WWE, they all do it. It's work for the false finish. They're working to get the crowd to chant, this is awesome. And if I never heard the crowd chant, this is awesome again, I'd be fine with it.
Yeah.
Because it just feels like it's a trope now. And you can tell they're doing it. And there are just certain things that happen in matches all across that they've made too much of an effort for everything to try to be a quote-unquote five-star classic, that if everything is a five-star classic, okay, AEW, it's why I stopped watching it. Like, I don't watch it at all because all they want to do is do these five-star classics to impress a certain man from California who's a friend of yours, that if everything's a five-star classic, then none of it is. It just becomes lost in the shuffle. Just Steve Austin versus Bret Hart stands out because there was nothing else like it that holds up to this day. If every match was like that on the show, then it wouldn't mean anything to me.
Okay. Well, these are interesting points.
You need some that are. No, you go ahead. I knew this was going to trigger something.
I was going to say if we're talking about now not liking Smart Mark commentary from the crowd. May I say, I remember a certain young man back around 2017 in Warren, Ohio, chanting, you deserve it, at Elias as he was getting ready for his call-up from NXT. So there is that.
That was really fun. That was really fun, yes. He deserved it. He deserved it. Yeah, that was a good time, you know. But
yes.
It's just one of those things now. I don't I don't know. I just think it's like, you know, different strokes for different folks kind of thing out there. And I think hopefully there'll be a little bit of a blend on that of the different styles and everything of what we're going to see. And I can't wait until we talk about, speaking of styles, can we talk about AJ Styles? You talk about a build of where'd that come from? Why is this happening? Like, if you would have said to, like, we all fan, if you're not, you don't follow the Fed, you know, weekly, you still have that fantasy book of like in your mind, okay, I could see this is where they're going for these big matches, and not a single one that I thought of is actually happening, which I think is kind of wild.
Yeah,
like eight. Yeah, but
well, I will, I'm
sure we'll get into all that.
Oh yeah, and I guess the last point I make, because I want to play off of what you just said there, that, you know, if everything is supposed to be at this level, then nothing is. I would say about that, it's WWE with the young guys. Because I keep hearing, because they haven't really cycled too many of them up into the main event yet. But you've got, I mean, Bron Breakker clearly looks like he's going to be on his way, as well as Jacob Fatu. Not that he's necessarily super young, but he's new to the Fed. But when you're talking about like Carmelo and some of the guys down at NXT, like Oba Femi, and I keep hearing, you know, from Meltzer and some of these other guys, oh, this guy's the future. It's kind of like what they say about in the NFL. If you have two quarterbacks, it means you don't have one. So I think part of it is,
you're right,
they're still, I think, working their way through, because at a certain point in time, one of the things that AEW learned to do after that first year, because in the first year, I wasn't as familiar with a lot of these guys from the indies and everything else like that. And I'm sitting there, I'm trying to discern a pecking order. And it wasn't necessarily easy to do, but then it kicked in sometime in 2020, and it's been pretty clear ever since. The pecking order, particularly with the young guys, because I think one of the themes we're going to have is that the main event scene needs a freshening up. You have all of these guys who theoretically can come in and do that, but I think they're still sorting out in their own minds, beyond Braun and beyond Fatu, who's the next guy who's ready to get moved right up into that by maybe next year.
No, you're absolutely right. And it is, you know, it's the problem that they've had for a very long time, in of that they need to make younger stars that are viable stars. I would say the one they have made the most of that is the biggest one to come out is Rhea Ripley. She has that crossover appeal. She has a chance to, you know, I mean, break barriers, the fact that she's a woman, and but could very easily be, with the way they push women now on the, almost on an equal footing as men in the WWE, that she has that ability and that look. She has a special, like, there's just something special, but she's real about her. She's one of the only ones that really first pops out in my mind as, you know, to be another, the next level of a John Cena, I guess you could say, of like that crossover mainstream appeal.
Very possibly. I do find it funny, though, that you would look at her in the one sense, as far as her being a great worker and everything else like that, and look at her as one of the poster children for, you know, post-evolution, you know, legitimate women's wrestler. And yet to get to the level she got to, let's face it, they basically went Attitude Era and leaned into making her, you know, goth mama, you know, all tarted up and everything like that, basically. I'm not doing a good job of describing it, but they lean so far into the goth sex appeal of it. So it is kind of funny that it's like they'll go to the old toolbox whenever they need to on that, because basically that's what it was. They had her, basically, it was the revised look and the attitude that came with that that pushed her to the moon, not the great work rate that she already had.
And but it's going to be the look that pushes you to the moon. You could maybe have a great work rate and get 5 stars all day long, but if you don't have that, like, okay, Ricochet, who I understand is doing probably the best work of his career right now in AEW, finally as a heel. I mean, I'll give credit where credit is due, but he was bland. I don't care how many flips and moves you can do. That's the problem. It's a lot of things. It's like, I forget who was listening. It was one of the wrestling insiders said the least important, like, anybody can do moves. Mm-hmm. It's how you do the moves and why you do the moves and in what way in the story, you know, of how they're done, I guess. And like, but like, you know, going back to him, and it's a prime example of one that would be with Ricochet. It just, there was just no personality that ever came out, and it was just never going to until they finally let him be, you know, something. They took that snotty little arrogant guy on the internet and finally, like, you know, let them loose and good. You know, I like it when the, you know, guys do that and they get a chance to show out when they, you know, leave a certain place and then become a better version of, and it goes, you know, vice versa on that one. Lexus King. Is 10 times better than Brian Pillman Jr. ever was in AEW. The way they use him there, in my opinion. Ricochet is being used, and Swerve Strickland are great examples of in AEW now, as opposed to how WWE use them. It's just interesting how one person, the creative mind of one person can see something in somebody that another person's creative doesn't.
That's true.
Especially now where we're at, you know, having, you know, so many years of the Vince McMahon administration, now we're in the full-blown Triple H, Nick Khan era, what they view as, you know, star power and, you know.
That's true. Yeah. Now, that's a very good point. And, but again, this is, this still looks like a card that looks like something Vince could have put together maybe 4 years or so ago. We'll have to see how it goes. I'm going to take the order of matches off of Wikipedia. I'm dubious that this is how it's going to go. First of all, I would think that they would probably lead with a better, hotter match than this one. But according to Wikipedia, the leadoff match Saturday night is for the World Tag Team Championship, which right then and there, I mean, that kind of is like, why do you have two tag team belts again? I realize you have two shows, but it's just, it's a further example of the Fed with the belt inflation.
You don't have two women's tag team titles. True. That's my argument to that.
Oh, that's a great point. You don't have to. Yeah. And we'd be so much better off if they didn't. This is the War Raiders. They are the champions right now. Eric and Ivar versus the New Day, Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods. And this feels like something. This feels like a culmination of this New Day turn that's been going on for months and months, where they kind of shockingly turned on Big E the way that they did there. And it feels like this is going to be something to kind of just kind of build their heat up. They are clearly aspiring to get to the Don Callis level of heat, and it looks like they're getting there. But, you know, I am predicting that, again, I think it'll be a good, not great match. I think it'll give the outcome that furthers the story beat. But, I don't – why was it them against the War Raiders at WrestleMania? It seems like they could have built a probably, you know, a more logical type thing. Maybe if some folks that were known to be friends of Big E, you know, potentially in a tag team title match where, you know, could have been that, somebody trying to really avenge Big E. But, you know, it is what it is on this one. I'm sure this will be a decent enough match. 3 stars in advance.
this is another prime example of kind of all over the place directionless storytelling, because when this incident first happened, when they first turned heel, a team that had been, you know, beloved baby faces by that audience for a very long time, for what, 10 years, I think it was, something like that, that they were out there. And, you know, they had that thing with Big E, and then that led into the program with Rey Mysterio as a locker room leader. And it felt like, okay, maybe we're going to go in something like that with, like, you know, them stepping up. Even if they would have done, like, you know, Kofi versus Rey. Or something to that effect. The whole end game was to put the tag team titles, put in the tag team title match. But it just seems like, you know, they did the thing with Big E, and then he was just never mentioned again. And like, it's like he doesn't work there. He works there. They act like, you know, it's like, I just don't like when stuff just all of a sudden just gets dropped and we just don't talk about it ever again. I'm looking at you, Dwayne, you know, stuff. It just comes in for half a second and then it's just never brought up again. And this is a prime example of that was this, you know, they're booing him because it's like almost as an audience member, you've forgotten why you hate the New Day. Like, if you didn't see that, they don't remind you of it. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I'm going to go with the opposite of this one and say that Big E does get involved and helps the War Raiders win as some sort of payoff to what happened there. And then, you know, the New Day gets the win late, you know, they win the tag team titles on Backlash or wherever when he's not involved. But then they get that feel good moment where Big E gets a bit of revenge by costing them the tag match. At WrestleMania. It's the only real thing I could think of is like, or we could just cheat to win and, you know, we'd act like we just keep moving forward.
Yeah. I could see it going either way, I guess, after hearing what you had to say. If you're relying
just, to me, Rick, this is just the kind of match that I would just fast forward over on Raw.
Yeah, exactly. And it's it's one of those things where if you're relying on your storyline continuity for Kill Tony coming on and doing a mini roast on Monday Night Raw and cracking wise about Big E's neck, if that's what you're counting on for your storyline continuity and reminding the audience, then yeah, it's kind of a sad state of affairs.
Not even to that level, but like, you know, like having like the New Day just mentioned that, you know, they cut their dead weight. They don't need the fans, you know. There's things that are holding it. Make any reference to it possible, but they just haven't done that. And it's just kind of it just kind of left hanging out in, you know, space, essentially. It's just out there.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just I feel like stuff is left on the table there. I mean, there must be a reason why.
Yeah, and who knows what it is. The next match is a perfect example of what I was talking about before, about something being sort of mid-story. Chad Gable, very new to this El Grande Americano persona. He's in there with Rey Mysterio. This is a thing where, again, Rey at this stage of his career, much like somebody that we'll mention later on in the card here, maybe more than one person potentially. I mean, he seems to be at the stage where he's just sort of putting over other guys here. So I'm guessing that it's going to be Americano here, unless they end up having a surprise return, because they seem to be building towards potentially him facing I'm trying to think of the name of him coming back in. The guy where when we saw him in War and Tommy End, and you were like, I've never seen Tommy End before. I'm trying to Aleister Black. Yeah.
Aleister Malachi Black.
That's why I couldn't think of it. Yeah. Yeah.
Former leader of the House of Black guys.
Yes. Yes. So they House of Black guys. So they've been, I'd seen some online speculation that they're going to build towards him, you know, taking on Gable at some point here. So maybe it becomes a run-in situation, maybe somewhat akin to Hacksaw Jim Duggan at WrestleMania 3, who knows. But, I mean, I don't know. This is one where I'm guessing that Gable slash Americano goes over to further his growth. But this is still relatively early slash mid in his whole storyline development. And he didn't get into this character with Rey Mysterio as an end game. The end game is going to be somebody else, and that somebody else isn't wrestling him at WrestleMania. That's kind of an example of one of my points there, I think.
Yeah, this is one of those ones that feels very Vince to me. I don't know. However, my buddy said to me, he goes, well, how is it that El Grande Americano gets to have a singles match on WrestleMania, but Chad Gable doesn't? And without missing a beat, I just responded back with, because El Grande Americano is better than Chad Gable. Duh.
Well, yeah, you know who both of them are a lot better than? Shorty G. Both of them blow that guy away. So that is yeah. Yeah, the darkest days of the
That's Vince one of those cut. Ones that's been that's terrible. You're short.
Yeah.
That's your gimmick, pal. You're short.
Yeah.
Dress like a terror. What is with Vince McMahon wanting to, like, the later run wanting to dress so many people as basketball players? I don't get that.
I don't know.
don't understand. What is that?
And again, whatever happened to Vince having amnesia about the fact that theoretically most of your characters are supposed to be out there to try to draw money? I mean, you know, it just as opposed to, again, his own amusement and his own fart jokes and everything like that. So, you know, this match will be fine for what it is. But like you said, kind of a throwaway Monday Night Raw match. I think we're going to say that about a lot of matches on the card.
Night one on the main event, to me, every single match on this card, I'm pretty sure for night one, is a throwaway main event, is a throwaway Monday Night Raw match. This night one to me feels like an episode of Raw.
Yeah, it very well could be. The next match, I don't think it's going to be great work rate-wise with Mrs. Brandon Phillips in there versus Naomi. Now, Naomi's a great worker, and she's going to get the most out of Ms. Cargill than anybody possibly can. This at least has a story behind it, but I was told that when Jade Cargill came into the Fed, oh, yeah, her work rate's going to improve a lot, and she's going to be under our banner now, and oh, boy, she won't be the old, you know, clumsy musclehead she was in AEW. Well, you know, funny how that turned out. So this is an attempt to at least give her a story that she can sink her teeth into. I think she's miscast as a face. I think that will continue to manifest itself over time. But again, this match will be as good as Naomi can basically drag it to be, I would say.
I absolutely agree with everything you just said there. I mean, mean, they can only use smoke and mirrors so much to do what they can to protect Jade Cargill. They've had her in tag match. They bought her on the look and not so much on once the execution started happening. And they were like, oh, okay. Like, well, like she's not very good. And this one could be, to borrow the old phrase, bowling shoe ugly. Naomi has to have her working boots on to make this one work here. And Jade reminds me as a lot like the Ultimate Warrior, in of that everything's great. Her entrance is awesome. She's got the look and then the bell ring.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just like,
okay. Well, can't she make it through? She's better than the Warrior was, but I need to use that analogy there. The thing that I find most interesting about this is the trivia question that this match is the answer to a trivia question that nobody asked. This is the first ever one-on-one women's match without a title or a stipulation in WrestleMania history.
Wow. Okay.
First time ever in history.
Back in the day, it would have been, you know, puppies on a pole match or something like that. So,
how far back you have to go to get to just a one-on-one women's match at WrestleMania that was just not for a championship. It was Tori Wilson and I believe Candice Michelle in like a pillow fight match or something at like WrestleMania 22 or 23. That's kind of wild. But yeah, first ever one-on-one regular match between two women, not for a championship and no stipulation in WrestleMania history.
Well, and at the risk of being a tribalist troll, I will mention that it has been pointed out a lot on the old interwebs recently here that as far as the black guys in the Fed, they're having a hard time making the big shows here. They're having a hard time getting a foothold on some of the bigger shows here. So it is nice to see that whatever predispositions they might have, that's a nice way of putting it. It doesn't apply to the women. At the very least, they don't have that kind of mental block when it comes to the women. Two black women wrestling in this match here. I will say also, too, the arrogance of the Fed leadership here. Oh, we're just going to train Jade Cargill a lot better and that'll solve everything. Do they not know that it was Bryan Danielson that was training her in AEW? I mean, you know, like if Bryan Danielson has trained you for a year and you're still basic at best, and basic is incredibly kind, then you are what you are. But, you know, they're going to, you know,
send her to Rip Rogers.
Yeah, Rip Rogers. Cue joke about fishing something out of a toilet right now. I think that was in the was that not in the sleaze thread? I think.
Oh, it was. Maybe.
I think it was. Yes. So yeah, the toilet is rather apropos, I think, of what the work rate will be in that match. I don't think we'll say the same about
five
the next
stars.
Match. Negative five stars.
Five stars. Six if it was in the Tokyo Dome.
Tokyo Dome. Negative five stars, trademark past lounge guest Brian Alvarez. The next match will be a really good one.
He has been great, by the way. Just Brian Alvarez has amused me. He has been great, by the way. I thoroughly enjoy when I catch him calling out Dave Meltzer and then bickering like an old married couple. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. Alvarez. Throw that out there. Alvarez is amusing, no question about it. LA Knight defending the United States Championship against Jacob Fatu. This is a Jacob Fatu elevation match, clearly. Again, kind of random as far as putting these two guys together. Why LA Knight had to be the transitional champion. I mean, I'm never averse to seeing him wear gold because I've always thought that's one of the guys that could and should be perhaps higher on the card than he is based on the way that the crowd reacts to him. But this is kind of an example of like where I'm talking about that, like, they're doing things where WrestleMania is like mid-story beat for so many of these things here. We thought it would be Jacob Fatu and Solo possibly in a match here. I mean, that's something where they're going to continue a build on that. Are they going to milk this all the way to SummerSlam with those two? Who knows? But you would have thought that would have been the match here. Clearly, they thought the direction was put some gold on Jacob Fatu first. They're going to do that. It'll actually be the second time he's had gold because a year ago, He was one half of the tag team champions before they thought better of it, of like, oh, this team's going to have to do a job at some point, and we don't want him to be part of that. So they retconned that to where it was two of the others in the group that were holding the title. But again, you know, Jacob Fatu is going to be elevated from this. He is one of the guys that's, you know, the part of the next group of main event guys here. There's probably a match with Roman Reigns in the offing somewhere here. So, I mean, I can't complain with the elevation of Jacob Fatu, but it's a random opponent for him. And again, it's putting off the solo match, which is one where if you're thinking Jacob Fatu has a WrestleMania worthy match for this year, it would be with him. It would be the culmination and the breakup of the new bloodline.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a very entertaining match. This is one of the ones I'm looking forward to the most on this card, just because I'm a huge Fatu fan, and LA Knight has long since brought it for years, and I'm glad to see you guys in this have this opportunity to be in, you know, under the spotlight like this. I just think this match would have had a much better build had LA Knight not lost the championship in what has seemingly turned out to be a rather pointless Shinsuke Nakamura United States Championship run that went nowhere. Yep. And did yep. nothing to, I mean, it, I guess, elevated his. It was unnecessary, in my opinion. Had he had been still a champion this entire time, I think it would have had more emphasis and have been a bigger moment for Jacob Fatu to defeat him. Now, logic in my brain says Jacob Fatu goes over, but I can also see the WWE booking of Solo costing Jacob Fatu the match at WrestleMania to further that story. I wouldn't agree with that booking, but I could see them doing that booking.
Yeah.
Because they did just put the belt back on LA Knight. So to your point, it almost, then he's just a transitional champion. Had they never done the Nakamura thing, then it would have had a lot more, he had a lot, but a stronger position going into this.
Well, here's my counterpoint to that. If they really cared that much about not making LA Knight a transitional champion here, they never would have given Shinsuke the pointless title reign in the first place. So I don't think they're really too concerned about LA Knight. I think it's one of those, ironically, I think they're looking at him like they looked at Shinsuke, of where he was bulletproof to a certain floor, I guess you would say. Now, Nakamura is a guy in 2017, when we saw him in Warren sort of at the tail end of that run there, I was kind of pessimistic, like, yeah, Vince is just going to make him a sushi chef or something like that, that he can understand in his simple mind. And they didn't exactly do that, but it was a thing where after a year or so of having him high up on the card, they kind of decided he is what he is. And based on his charisma, he'll never get past a certain floor. And I think they'd been content to use him that way since, which I had considered to be a waste at the time. But I mean, I'm long since past the point, because I think basically they beat the value out of him. They're probably on the way to doing the same thing with LA Knight, of like, well, he'll always be over to a certain degree. The crowd is into him. The crowd's going to finish his catchphrases. So I don't think they're too worried about him.
LA Knight, unfortunately, got too hot at the wrong time, and they yes. were too, they had to finish that Cody Rhodes story.
Yes.
So his popularity like came right in the midst of that, and when he didn't win the championship,
yeah,
it killed him. That it just, like, the people who were all, because they wanted him to get that opportunity. There's a lot of times where, like, you know, the fans want their guy to get the championship match or get that opportunity, because they feel like he's being slighted when he gets it and he doesn't win. It's like, well, he got it, you know. And it happens. I mean, there's over the years we could give unlimited number. Rusev is the first one that pops into my mind when they had the main event. He had a main event of pay-per-view for the world title because of all the whole Rusev Day thing. And that was it. There you go. You got your moment. Get it out of your system. The only one that actually overcame that was Daniel Bryan Danielson back in the day. He was the only one, and their hands were forced. They didn't have a choice. They had to do it early.
Right.
It would have been mutiny. But everybody else is just kind of like, you know, had this been, you know, 2 years ago and they gave LA Knight the Jey Uso push of this year, oh, it would have been humongous. He'd have been a superstar.
Absolutely.
A megastar.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, too, they could have potentially, you know, moved him to Raw and basically put him on top of the card there. They do things outside of the draft season, quote unquote, all the time. So it wasn't like you necessarily had to feed him to Roman. You could have taken him out of Roman's path and put him on top of Raw and elevated him there. But, you know, hindsight's 20/20 on that one. The next match here, I will say, I'm saying night one, there's only one semi-main event. Some people might be tempted to put this match as that one. I am not. This match is not a semi-main event in my book. No matter how much they've tried to get us to buy into it with all these extra shenanigans and everything like that, however much you believe of it or don't, Tiffany Stratton defending the women's championship against Charlotte Flair. And it's one of those things where, again, Charlotte Flair getting the kind of go-away heat on coming back. I think somehow or another they were delusional enough to think that she'd... Charlotte is basically the one person, I think, that's like immune to the welcome back pop. Everybody gets the welcome back pop in the world, but the person who's been shoved down our throats more than most is not going to be the one that gets that. So they've tried to do the whole thing here, work shoot stuff here that allegedly blurred into a shoot with some of the promo comments. I'm half expecting Scott Hudson to be a guest commentator for the match so he can channel the year 2000 and say, what are they supposed to do now? Improvise? You know, but this is a match where it just, I mean, it's capable based on the ability of both of them to put together good matches, both based on the athleticism of both. It could be a good match. I mean, if this match fetched as high as, say, 3.75 stars, I wouldn't be sitting here having a heart attack and surprise. But it also could blend into a horrible styles clash. And again, if any of the unprofessionalism between the two that they have exhibited, allegedly with some of the shoot comments, comes up again, you talk a bowling shoe ugly, this one has the lowest floor on the card, because if these two get unprofessional and shiznit gets real, in a sense it'll be more entertaining than most other things Saturday night, but in another sense too, as a pro wrestling match, it will completely fall apart.
I don't think they're gonna that it's gonna devolve into a shoot, but that is the that is also one of the build of the intrigue of a build where you're like, oh yeah, will they go shoot on each other? I don't see that happening. I just don't see what the big deal is about Tiffany Stratton. I got the whole it's Tiffy time, but I mean, every time she hits that her version of the BME, the PME, I think that's what they call it, the prettiest moonsault ever.
Yeah.
I'm just like cringing that she's going to hit her head.
Right.
Like every single time I see her do it, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I commend them for wanting to build a star out of this, somebody new coming out of it. But like, it just, I don't know. This just feels like almost like forced in a way. It just, for the amount of people that could actually put on a WrestleMania caliber women's match. You remember a couple of years ago, Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley tore the house down because they were pissed off that they didn't get the main event. And right. No one could follow them. And it was one of the best women's matches ever in wrestling history.
Right.
It was amazing. Charlotte was capable of doing that. I just don't see that same level of intensity in an opponent like a Tiffany. This is going to be 100% Charlotte Flair carrying this to whatever it's going to be. It's on her, because, you know, Tiffany just doesn't have the reps in yet. And I don't know. I just find it, you know, interesting that they went ahead and pulled the trigger. I mean, they had to on, you know, because they gave her the money in the bank, so they had to pull the trigger. If you're going to do Charlotte Flair, is, say what you want about her, she is a recognizable star, even though she doesn't look anything like Charlotte Flair anymore. She is a recognizable, like, big name, big money star. Tiffany they're trying to get her to that. It just remains to be seen. Like, they even said this in the build. She comes across as like 2015 Charlotte Flair from NXT in a lot of ways. And she's a tall blonde that's athletic. That was Charlotte Flair's gimmick. It's a case of, it's like, you know, you're similar. I get the old guard, new, you know, what they're trying to do with this, where Tiffany suddenly said in a promo, like, she has absolutely nothing to lose, and Charlotte Flair has everything. If she loses, she just loses to Charlotte Flair, the greatest of all time in women's wrestling.
Yeah.
And that's her words, not mine. And if Charlotte's like, okay, then why? But Charlotte Flair has everything to lose, because then she just loses to a 25-year-old kid or whatever. I'm like, well, then no one wins. You've basically said that no matter what, whoever wins, everybody loses.
Well, Jake, let me postulate based on what you said here. When you're saying that, you know, part of the build supposedly is, you know, looking into not necessarily a mirror, but something like a mirror of your younger self, this is essentially Cactus Jack versus Terry Funk if those two were a couple of heavily made up blonde female wrestlers?
I never thought this match would be compared to Cactus Jack and Terry Funk. But my God, if Tiffy Time comes out with a barbed wire baseball bat and, you know, Charlotte starts swinging a ladder around her head, I'm all for it.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of those things, too, where you talk about Charlotte having to carry the match. This is a rusty Charlotte Flair, and B, when you talk about Charlotte doesn't look as much like she used to, you're, of course, referring to, as most people are, facially, but really sort of beyond that. It's one of those things where, you know, you could laud her for, oh, okay, washboard abs now or whatever, but there's also a certain amount of padding that the body needs to have, and it's not, hopefully it's not too piggish of me to say that Tiffany, you know, certainly still has that. Charlotte doesn't look as much like herself in that way either. She's gone in the direction of trying to be super lean and everything like that. So that was not the body that Charlotte Flair had when she was capable of carrying other wrestlers in matches. So that's a very big question mark if we're expecting her to carry this match. Maybe she still can. Instincts alone. It's like riding a bicycle. Maybe. But then again, maybe not.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You actually hit the nail on the head with that one because, you know, there's a lot of X factors and a lot of things that have changed there. And this could be a hard-hitting, stiff battle, or this could be Bowling Shoe Ugly. And I think it could go either way really quick, possibly at the same time.
Yeah, and it's normally a match like that where it might be like a real train wreck and might go off the rails. I might generally be excited to see it, like, oh, this will at least be a spectacle. But I'm still yawning at the thought of it, though, Jake. That's kind of sad.
It's just, to me, I'm just not. It just feels paint by numbers. It's like, here we go, Charlotte Flair's back. She's in a championship match. It's like, we've done this. She's been in the championship match every single year, unless she was hurt, every single year. Yeah. And my prediction, Charlotte Flair is going to win because Charlotte Flair has to get to what number is she at now? 14, 13, 14. She's got to get to 15. She's going to get to 17 because you know she's the one that's going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. To surpass not her father at that point, but John Cena, as we'll get to later in the thing here, spoiler alert. But now to the match that I would call the legitimate semi-main for the night. But it's also, I would say, damning with faint praise. Because, again, we would burst into gales of laughter if we compared the World Heavyweight Championship to the undisputed WWE Championship. But theoretically, top world title on both brands, supposed to be co-equal. We know it's anything but. Gunther defending against Jey Uso. And this is one of these ones where, again, so Jey Uso gets that push up the card here. And, again, it'll be very interesting to see if it's a cautionary tale like last year, where we'll talk about Damian Priest subsequently. He's wrestling in the second night on a thrown-together match. Where's Jey Uso going to be a year from now? I mean, this is, I think it's kind of a cynical thing, the way that they've built around him, because, I mean, he's a merch monster, and he gets the chance going like nobody else these days. But does everybody forget what dog crap that match was that he had with his brother last year at WrestleMania, and that he's never really been somebody that's, you know, really wowed the crowd with, not to use the dreaded IWC term of work rate, but I mean, you got to have a certain baseline of it anyways. And I will just say too, I mean, the Usos were never really my cup of tea as a quote unquote great tag team. So it's one of those things where, again, now I have found, again, Jey Uso has proven me wrong, because when he first started getting the singles matches for the title in, what was it, the fall of 20 or 21, I'm like, wait, what?
2020,
You're going to try and make the Usos distinguishable from one another. I never thought they'd do it, and they've done it. So, but I mean, he's basically playing with, to use the Vegas motif here, right? He's playing with house money at this point. They're clearly going to strap the rocket to him. The, you know, all things being equal rocket, it's only the Raw world title. Clearly he's going to get it here and he's going to have it. But I mean, where's he going to be a year or two from now? Is he going to be sustainable in that main event mix? I don't know. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. It's one of those things where if they'd have had two world titles around two shows, like when Hacksaw Duggan with Ho or Road Dogg with, you know, your ass better call somebody, you know, maybe they'd have been a world champion. Jey Uso with Yeet in this era of the split world titles is going to get a world title. So we'll have to see how that plays out. It's going to be a great match, if for no other reason, and Gunther is one part of it, and Gunther is one of the 5 to 10 best on God's green earth today.
So you mentioned, I want to touch on something. You mentioned, like, you know, guys with catchphrases that were over in the Attitude Era and whatnot, you know, if they would have had a secondary world championship. There was a episode, Monday Night Raw was in Cleveland one night in 1999 in this February. The world championship match, the WWE title was defended by The Rock, was defended against the Road Dogg. And we were at that Raw live, and my uncle said to me, he goes, they should have given, listen to how much the crowd loves the Road Dogg. They should have given him the belt. They're going nuts for him. And I looked at him, I go, I'm so glad you're not a wrestling booker. Here's the thing, man. I think there's more value to be made in Gunther retaining the championship. I think, you know, building him up over time as this dominant champion, I think there's so much that could be done with that. However, they want to make the kids happy, and the kids absolutely love Jey Uso. I get it. And that, you know, pushes the merch and everything. If we go with Jey Uso winning, it's going to lead into something else, because I'll tell you this, if he does, we'll go with the story that he is the, he wins. Mm-hmm. In my booking scenario, he is a transitional champion. There is not a long reign here.
Right.
And we'll get right. You know, it's absolutely not a long reign. He becomes a transitional champion. Possibly as soon as the next PLE, he loses it.
Yeah.
As fast as I'm saying it.
I can just see this. Looking at the night one card, I can, this won't be something on camera. This would be something off camera. But I can see him encountering good old Ray Ray in the back, and Ray Ray giving him a look and saying, enjoy it while it lasts. I've been there, kid.
So. And I mean, I will get into the story with that as we progress on, of where I think they're going with the Jey Uso will get his moment. His mm-hmm. brother will come out and celebrate him. The crowd will yeet. They will go nuts, and it will be a moment in time.
Yeah, basically a WrestleMania moment. Which yeah, is, because,
you know, that's what they try to do. You know, yeah. This is a moment, and to have, you know, the entire arena, just like they wanted them all to be. Yes, now they're yeeting.
Yeah. So yeah, they finally
might even yeah earlier too. Who knows?
They yeah, exactly. Yeah, between yeah and yeet, they finally found a replacement for yes after all this period of time. In the main event for the night, as you pointed out to me in a text, very random that this is how CM Punk gets his main event. Roman Reigns, CM Punk, Seth Rollins, triple threat match. I mean, it's one of those things where you could see the minute that they started moving towards putting this together, this was going to be the night one main event, because it blows away Gunther and Jey Uso in terms of build, in terms of star power. And I say that without even any disrespect towards Gunther, who has really established himself as a world champion and taken a step up. But these guys have been in main event spots for years. A lot of story that's being told here. The two guys with the ties to Paul Heyman, but all of the speculation that I'm seeing is that this is a red herring, and in the end, that it's the wise man that walks away with Seth Rollins, and Seth Rollins comes out on top in this match, thus giving Roman Reigns and CM Punk something to go after him with. And the hint I've even further seen online, I don't know if they'll go in this direction, but I think, like, Seth Rollins has made some sort of, you know, friendly tweets towards The Rock and everything like that, that maybe it becomes some kind of an alliance with Heyman and Rollins, potentially with The Rock and John Cena. And that maybe you see some, you know, very, you know, high power, star power tag team matches there. You could easily headline a PLE, potentially even SummerSlam, if it was like Rollins and Cena against Reigns and Punk. So don't be surprised if it goes in that direction.
I could see that. My logic says I just see like Heyman turning on Punk and helping Roman win, and Punk kind of being along the lines of, yeah, I kind of knew you were going to do that mm-hmm. when I asked you, kind of like the, you know, I knew what I was getting myself into kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just coming out of this, I have Roman Reigns winning because it sounds crazy. I think he needs the win more okay. so than the other two do. And for the story coming out of it, the next night on Raw, And when Jey Uso has his championship celebration, and that's when Roman comes out to acknowledge him as the champion. And then Roman, who has been a heel this entire time, despite the fact that the champ fans have been cheering for him, he's still the same narcissistic leader heel. He turns on Jey Uso and attacks him because he wants that belt. Because at the end of the day, it's all about him being in the position of power. And that's who Jey Uso loses his belt to, is Roman Reigns.
Okay.
And it's the world heavyweight championship. So I see that splitter off with Rollins and Punk doing an actual program proper, other than the two matches we've already seen. I know everyone says, like, you know, I've seen all the stuff online about, you know, Rollins going with Punk. I think there's too much stuff online about, or I'm sorry, Rollins, Heyman going with Rollins. I think there's too much stuff online about that. And if we've seen stuff in the past, when stuff gets like way out there, they don't do it. And I don't see them doing it. I think that was intentionally put out there to make people think that that's what's going to happen. Heyman has said it out of character that he's not going to work with anybody other than Roman Reigns or CM. Okay. I just don't see him being aligned. I just don't, at his age, I just don't see something like that happening. I see somehow the question is, how do you interweave everything together? So the one idea that you can have here is that CM Punk somehow makes it so Roman pins Rollins. Mm. So therefore, because Roman has never beaten Rollins ever. So then you can go with the, it's Punk's fault that Roman finally got his win over Rollins. And then that furthers the anger with Rollins and Punk. And then the Heyman thing almost becomes like, it's a factor, but it's a non-factor. At the end of it, it's going to right itself and he's going to end up back with Roman Reigns, in my opinion.
Okay. The other, the only thing I would say to that is, I mean, you would then be settling into, if it's Roman as a heel champion on Raw, then it's sort of like, you know, his reign really sort of mimicked, and not in a good way, the Triple H reign of terror of the early 2000s here. So if you're going to do that again, and if you're kind of going to go against the crowd, because it was the crowd that basically, now I know that a lot of it was, they were feeding the crowd with the hints of, you know, Roman while he was gone and everything like that. But so it was not completely inorganic or organic, but as far the crowd, I think they think that there's more value in Roman as staying face at this point in time, as opposed to turning heel. That's the only thing, because they've done that. It's not to say that they couldn't go back to the well, and you're going to have Cena as the big heel champion on SmackDown. So that's just you're my not, thought
so,
there.
So you want to have Roman there because you have Cena in that spot. So right. I could very easily see them doing similar to a Brock Lesnar, Cody Rhodes feud where he turns heel on Jay, and then Jay beats Roman. And that's when Roman endorses him and and he gives him that, like, and that would also complete the Bloodline storyline. Because the whole Bloodline story was about Jey Uso and Reigns. So it actually would bring that full circle.
Well, I was told by Paul Heyman that we were only in like the third inning of that whole Bloodline storyline. So, you know, not with
10. I think we're in a rain delay.
Jake, we've been in a rain delay since the Survivor Series. But, you know, they make world's longest rain delay. This is longer than the rain delay of Game 7 of the 2016 World Series, for a painful reminder. But,
yes. You know. The only time I've ever believed in the HARP conspiracy theory.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. What a sad occasion here.
No one can convince me that President Barack Obama, who is from Chicago, didn't turn on the weather control, or that one isolated spot to control the weather. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Using the weather, you know, the seeded clouds, as it were. Absolutely.